All right, we are live. Recording started, and we're good to go. Welcome to our November 19th Total Fitness Bodybuilding Talk Show. My name is Lee Hayward, and I have some cool stuff that I want to talk to you on this show before we actually get into your questions and answers. One thing that I wanted to mention is I was lucky enough this past weekend to actually train with Division I strength and conditioning football coach, Jason Paris. I trained with him this past weekend down in Austin, Texas, and we got into some good workouts, and he actually shared some cool training tips with me, some, I guess, functional strength and agility training type stuff, things that I'm not really, that's not really a part of my normal workout routine. Like, I'm more into, I guess, the bodybuilding workouts and things like that. Now, I do, you know, change things up from time to time, but it was really cool to be able to train with this guy and do some more functional training, some agility drills, and, you know, different types of stuff that I'm just not used to. And I got to say, after just training with him this past weekend, I felt like some new muscle soreness that I normally don't experience. So it was pretty cool. One thing you'll notice if you've been following along with my videos and stuff like that and with my articles and whatnot is that I'm a big believer in changing things up when your progress starts to slow down. And that's the key to making continuous progress. I mean, once you start to plateau, you need to change things up in order to break out of that plateau and to provide your body with some new muscle stimulation. And that's something that I really did this past weekend now training with Jason Paris. I have a couple YouTube videos up there now, and I'm going to be posting a bunch more as the week goes on because, like I say, we shot a lot of footage, and some of the stuff we're getting there now is kind of like just warm-up conditioning drills. But then with the later videos that I'll be posting up, you'll actually see some of the actual workouts that we did. So, again, it's pretty cool stuff, and you want to check that out. With that being said, I'm going to jump right now into our chat window. I know we got a few people on and some questions coming through already. If you're brand new to the show, brand new to the Total Fitness Bodybuilding Talk Show, I want to welcome you. Nice to have you on board. And the way this works is I'm going to take live questions and answers over the show. So for the next 50 minutes or so, you have my undivided attention, and I'm going to answer your questions and do some one-on-one right here on the show. So again, the way it works is in our chat window, if you're watching through leehayward.com/TV, you'll see the chat window there. Right-click, or actually just click, left-click on my name, and you'll get an option to pop up, and you will have a little option there to say send a private message. Send me a private message with your questions, and I will answer them on a first-come, first-served basis. So again, just find my name, Lee Hayward, in our user list there, and left-click on it. Don't right-click. Left-click on it, and it will come up and give you the option for a private message. And I'll be taking those questions right now. So I'm just going to jump right to our chat window. Like I said, I know we got some here coming through already. Okay, what do we have? Haley, William Freebody from Eastern Kentucky here, and I don't do drugs. Okay, good for you. I'm bench pressing 340 pounds right now. What can I do to bench press 1,075 without steroids? I don't know. When you figure that one out, you can send me an email and let me know. great way to start the show off with a very unrealistic question. Anyway, I'm just going to leave that one at that. I think if anybody can move 1,000-plus pounds with any lift, you're doing pretty darn good. Okay, we'll move on. I'm going to just skip that one. Haley, I'm kind of a hard gainer, 6'2", 192, very lean, on a very lean diet, but 6-7 meals a day. Is the muscle hybrid theory good for hard gainers? I want to get bigger but stay lean. Precious calories, buddy in Chicago, Illinois. Okay, I think what you're asking there was the lean hybrid muscle program that we actually talked about on our last week's show. I had a special guest coach, Elliot Hulse, in talking about the lean hybrid muscle style of training. And, oops, he almost knocked the camera over there. Whoa, we're okay, we're cool. But, yeah, what we were talking about on last week's show was the that program. And that was geared mainly for fat loss and while maintaining strength. It's not necessarily a good mass-building program. And this was, I'm just regurgitating what Elliot told me. He was saying that this program was basically designed for them when they were bigger, because they trained in strongman and powerlifting and things like that, and they built a lot of strength and size, but they also put on some excess body fat in the process. So they developed this style of training to help them trim off that body fat while still maintaining their strength and their muscle mass in the process. So again, this is not necessarily a mass-building program per se. Now, I'm not saying that you couldn't use it, and you know, with a high-calorie diet and whatnot, and use it for building mass, but that wasn't the main intention of the program. For a hard gainer mass-building program, I'd recommend the hard gainer. And this is a program that my good and it's a really killer training system designed specifically for hard gainers who are having trouble putting on muscle mass. And it covers, you know, the workouts, goes well into nutrition and supplementation for building muscle mass. Like I say, Jeff has really done a killer job with it. And the cool thing that I like about that program is the fact that it's not just a program based on theory. He actually coached a group of guys and used them as his guinea pigs. I think he calls them lab rats or whatever. But anyway, he used these guys as his guinea pigs to test out this training system and the program and kind of tweaked it according to their results. So again, if you want to check that out, just go to hardgainerprojectx.net. And I'll just type that into the chat window there for you, buddy. So if you want to go check that out, that would be a better program, I think, for building mass for a hard gainer than the lean hybrid muscle. So again, I'll just type that in for you. HardGainerProjectX.net. And I'll, for those of you watching in the main audience chat window, like I said, I just replied to Buddy's private message. And again, I'm going to put that in our chat window as well. Okay. So hopefully that came through. Cool. What else we got here? Let's see. Someone's saying, I need something to blast my calves. And saying that also the 20-rep squat routine is amazing. Okay, for calf training, I actually posted a killer calf training tip a while back on YouTube, actually just a couple weeks ago. So if you went to my YouTube channel right now and scrolled through some of the videos, the recent ones, you would see this calf training tip. But basically what it is I found the key to building calves is to use an exaggerated range of motion. And what I mean by that is when you get set up for calf raises, hold the bottom stretch of the calf raise, so you have it set up so that you can lower your heels all the way down without the weight plates touching on the calf raise machine. That's if you're using, say, like a standing calf raise or a seated calf raise or something like that. You want to set it up so that you can lower your heels all the way down, get a really deep stretch in the calves without the weight plates touching. So you're doing a stretching with weights, basically, with the calf raise. Hold that for a good 10 seconds, really feel your calf stretch, and then come all the way up onto your tippy toes and hold that peak contraction for a good 10 seconds and just keep going through that, you know, really exaggerating your range of motion, going for the full peak contraction, for the full stretch. And if you do that for all your calf exercises, so let's just say you were to do standing calf raises, you were to do seated calf raises, and then maybe leg press calf raises where you're using the leg press and your heels hanging off the bottom of the foot plate. If you did a couple sets on each of those exercises, that would be a killer calf workout right there. And if you really wanted to go balls to the wall on your off days from your training, you could probably even do some bodyweight calf raises at home as well. But again, that's what I'd recommend. Use that really exaggerated slow range of motion and do standing calf raises, seated calf raises, and leg press calf raises. And I bet if you do that consistently for about 6 weeks or so, you'll notice some improvement in your calves. But I have to admit that calf training, it's one of those body parts where genetics do play a role. I mean, yes, you can train and kind of overcome your genetics to some degree and whatnot, but they do have a big role. Like me, I naturally have big calves. I always did since I started training. It's just a genetic thing. Now, I know a lot of people, most people, are the complete opposite. They genetically have weak calves. You know, that's a body part that lags behind for so many people. But regardless of where you are genetically, whether you're genetically gifted in the calf area or you genetically suck in the calf area, improvement is always possible. So again, that, you know, that's one what I'd recommend. What else? You just reply to that. You say that you saw the video and have been using it. What you did in the video, but how often do you recommend doing it? Okay, so how often do I recommend training calves? I would say start off with twice a week and see how that works for you. With calves, where they're a smaller muscle group, they're not going to exhaust you the same as, say, like doing squats or doing heavy back or stuff like that. I mean, they're a small muscle group. So, I mean, you can train your calves, train them hard, rev out to failure, and even though the muscles themselves are going to burn, you're not going to be physically exhausted in your body. I mean, like if you rep out squats to failure, that's totally draining and exhausting. If you rep out calves to failure, you know, you're basically just working the muscles, but you mean overall you don't feel exhausted from it. So I'd say start off training your calves twice a week and see how you respond. If you feel you can do it more often than that, then probably throw in, say, like 3 workouts a week. Maybe do one heavy workout, one lighter workout, one heavy workout and lighter, and just keep alternating like that. So, I mean, the calves, where they are a smaller muscle group, you can train them more frequently. So 2 to 3 times a week is what I'd recommend. Again, play it by ear. See how sore you feel after your workouts and things like that. But that's a good ballpark range to shoot for, 2 to 3 calf workouts a week to bring up stubborn calves. All right. Just going... what else we got here. Again, I don't see any complaints here, but I'm just going to double check. I want to make sure that our audio and video is coming through good, loud, and clear. So again, if you're watching this, can you just type into the audience chat window and just let me know? I think it is working good, but I just want to make sure before I go on any further. Cool. All right, loud and clear. Awesome, guys. Thanks. And it's pretty cool here because I actually did not post this the link to our chat window and that to the show on like my Facebook and Twitter and things like that. So we've got a little smaller crowd here tonight. I think there's only a couple dozen people on or so. So I should be able to answer more questions that you guys have rather than getting bogged down with a huge load of people here. Kind of did that on purpose because I find that sometimes we get too many people that I can all the questions. All right, next question coming through right here is, hey Lee, I have a severe forward tilted pelvis, a big arch in my lower back, shoulder slouch. What can I do to fix this problem? Something like that, I would actually probably recommend checking with your family doctor and checking with probably like even a chiropractor or someone like that, because anything that's, okay, you're saying your pelvis is tilted and things, I don't know if just regular weight training type workouts or whatever is going to fix that problem, or do you have like some sort of spinal issues or whatnot. So, again, that's kind of like out of my ballpark right here, but I would recommend, you know, probably checking with your family doctor or some, or a specialist of some sort to just make sure that everything is okay. What's it called? I forget it now, but there's, oh, shoot, the name of it, when your spine isn't straight. I know some people who have it. It begins with S, I think, but there's a, you probably know what I'm talking about. People are probably typing it into the chat window here now. Scoliosis? Yes, there, all right. I might be mangling up the word here, but... yeah, you probably want to go check with your doctor because that might be something that you have if your spine isn't straight or you find that your posture is a bit off and whatnot. You know, so that's really, that's not my area of expertise right there. Okay, Josh has got a question. He's saying, for the Blast Your Biceps program, I don't have any dumbbells, so can I use a barbell? If so, what workouts would you recommend instead of the dumbbell ones? Interesting. First of all, I would recommend you find a better gym. I mentioned that in the program. Obviously, you were one of the guys who got a sneak peek of the Blast Your Biceps program when I offered it as a like a little trial run there a while back. Right now, I'm working on the entire system. Like with the Blast Your Biceps program, I'm actually filming training videos to go along with it. I'm going to have the whole entire system on video that's going to be available with it. I'm putting out some killer bonus programs. So again, that's something that you can look forward to in the near future. But in the actual manual itself, one of the key chapters there was talking about the gym that you're training at. And it was saying how you need to find a gym that has the essential equipment that you need and one that kind of supports your training. And, you know, you're saying you don't have a dumbbells in your gym. Well, that's not a really good gym. Now, I don't know if this is a home gym or whatever, or if this is a commercial gym with no dumbbells, man, find a new gym for that's all I can say. If it's a home gym, you can start off with some adjustable dumbbells. That's what I trained with for years. Literally, I trained for 8 years in a home gym, and all I used was adjustable dumbbells. Yes, it's a bit of a pain in the ass, you know, changing the weights each set, but you know what? You get a couple handles, and if you got enough weight plates, you can make up a couple sets of, I guess, some of the commonly used weights that you use. And then if you're doing some specialized exercises where you need heavier or lighter dumbbells, you know, you can change it up. But again, for home gyms, these adjustable dumbbells with the screw-on collars, they're great because, again, they won't slip. Sometimes the clip-on collars are not the best, but that's what I'd recommend, and you should be able to find these at any like department store, any sporting goods store. I mean, even Walmart carries, you know, good iron weight plates and stuff, so you'd probably be able to pick up dumbbells there. Another option is you could probably use some rubber fitness bands. They're not the ideal because it's sometimes hard to get the appropriate resistance with rubber bands, so you may have to do higher reps to make it up. But again, that's a good alternative for dumbbell exercises as well. I won't really say it's an alternative, but it's something that you can do for now until you get more dumbbells. But, you know, there are barbell exercises in the program. But again, I think it's critical that you do find a gym that has dumbbells or that you at least get dumbbells for your home gym. Again, you didn't mention if you're training at a commercial gym or at home with your the question there, Josh. But yeah, that's critical, man. For regardless of what workout you're doing, whether it's a Blast Your Biceps program or whatever, you need dumbbells. I mean, it's one of the critical critical training tools. All right, what else we got? Zuka, I believe. I may be barbarizing your name there. Zuka, Z-U-Y-K-A. Never heard that name. It's an interesting name. All right, he says, "Hey Lee, hope you're in good spirits." And yes, I am in good spirits. I'm always in good spirits when we do our live Total Fitness Bodybuilding Talk Show. It's something I really enjoy. All right, you're saying that you wonder if you could clarify one thing for me. I know when I'm doing cardio workout that I sweat like crazy even after just 30 minutes of moderate intense cardio. However, when I'm doing weight at a very intense session, I don't sweat as much. You know, that's actually quite normal. I find that myself, if I'm doing cardio, like I probably sweat more than I do when I'm weight training. I find when it comes to weight training, how warm the gym is has a huge impact. And to give you an example of that, I live in Newfoundland, which is way up north for a lot of people, and obviously, in the summertime, you know, we get some nice summers here, and it gets pretty warm. And in the summertime, I find that I'll sweat more in the gym when I'm working out. I think it's just common sense. I mean, it's warmer, you're going to sweat more. In the wintertime, it's pretty cold sometimes, and I'll very often wear, like, a sweatshirt or, like, a hoodie or something to the gym to actually keep a bit warmer, and I won't sweat as much. So I find that just the temperature of the gym has a huge impact when it comes to my weight training, whether I'm going to sweat a lot or not. But when it comes to cardio, I find that even if it's fairly cold out, if I'm doing the consistent, steady-paced cardio there and really working it, I will sweat regardless. So I think that's totally normal to sweat more when you're doing cardio versus when you're doing your weight training. So I wouldn't worry about that at all. You're wondering, does that mean that you're going to burn less calories with weights than with cardio? with weight training, I don't really look at it as a calorie-burning activity. Yes, you're burning calories, but the actual working out and burning calories is not what you're in there for. Weight training is there to build muscle. That's your key right there. You're to build a muscle. And by building more muscle, you're going to burn more calories. I wouldn't really look at your weight training thing as like working out and trying to count the calories you're burning while you're working out or something like that. That would be pretty hard to calculate anyway because there's so many variables involved. But, you know, cardio, that's a calorie-burning, fat-burning exercise. That's what we do it for. I mean, yes, it's the health benefits and the endurance benefits and stuff like that of the cardio. But when it comes to physique transformation, the cardio is the calorie burner, the fat burner. Weight training is the muscle builder. So you want to kind of keep those two separate. Don't worry about how many calories you're burning with your weight training. What you want to worry about with your weight training is, one, are you making progress? Are you making strength gains with your weight training? That's one very critical measurable thing that you can track with your workouts. If you're making strength gains on a regular basis, then chances are you're also building muscle, and that's going to help you, you know, build muscle and burn body fat, because obviously the more muscle you have, more calories you're going to burn, and, you know, the better things work. I mean, that's all it is, the whole system. So again, weight training's for muscle building, the cardio is for burning the calories. All right, what else we got? And again, you're asking here, you mentioned another question there. You're saying that the presence of sweat is not a good measure of how much calories you're burning. And no, not really. Again, the temperature could have a huge impact. I mean, sometimes I'll sweat eating oatmeal or eating hot food or something like that. So, I mean, just the fact that you're sweating, that doesn't necessarily mean you're burning a lot of calories. I mean, if you go sit in a sauna, I mean, you could be sitting totally motionless in that sauna and start sweating. Does that mean you're burning a lot of calories? No, because, I mean, you're inactive. You're just sitting down in a sauna. But you could be outside, you know, probably like on a cold day doing some exercise and maybe not sweat as much. So, again, no, sweating is not an issue. What else we got? Johnny's asking a question saying, hey, Lee, you wanted to know if you're supposed to stop working out after 1 hour, should you do your cardio after 1 hour are you supposed to stop working out after 1 hour, and should you do your cardio after 1 hour or during that hour? I don't know. I'll do my best to decipher your question there, Johnny. First of all, no, you don't have to stop working out after an hour. It's good that if you can keep your workouts, you know, fast-paced and high-intensity and whatnot so that you get your training done within an hour. But if you go a little over an hour, I wouldn't worry about it, man. Sometimes I'm in the gym, you know, working out for over an hour. Like, there's that thing people say, well, you know, after an hour your testosterone levels are starting to deplete, so you should stop working out or whatever, but get your workout done. You know, if it takes you a little over an hour, it's not a big deal. I wouldn't like, oh my God, 60 minutes have gone by, stop. You know, if you haven't completed all your, you know, your entire workout, then finish it up. But again, it's good to have your workout structured in such a way that they only last about an hour. Because most people find that after an hour of steady, you know, if you're really drilling it and, you know, moving fast in your workouts, 1 hour is a darn hard workout. Now, if you're chit-chatting between sets or something like that, you know, you're going over and chatting with your buddies or whatever and not really pushing it that hard, then, yeah, you can stay in the gym for well over an hour. But if you're really pushing it hard, 1 hour is about what the max you can shoot for. You mentioned here about doing cardio. If you're here, Johnny, you might want to clarify your question, and, you know, just so I can answer it better. But you're saying, should you do cardio after or during that hour? I really don't know what you mean. With cardio workouts, I'll just talk about that for a bit. I typically like to keep my cardio workouts to about an hour. Like, that would be my hardcore fat loss cardio. for example, when I'm getting ready for a bodybuilding show, I will build up to the point where I'm doing an hour of cardio a day, usually first thing in the morning. And I'll mix that hour up. Like, for example, that could be an hour of walking. That might be an hour of bike riding. That could be an hour of going to the gym and using cardio machines there. And I'll mix that up. Like, it might be 15 minutes on four different machines, for example. But that's what I will shoot for. Now, I will work up to that hour. It's not like I go from 0 to 60 minutes of cardio a day. Now, that's a bit much. But I will gradually build myself up so that, say, like for the last 3 months before a bodybuilding show, I'll be doing an hour of cardio each morning. And I find that that really works great for fat loss. I mean, yes, it gets a bit monotonous. Yes, it takes some commitment and all that, but it works. You know, when you're following a good, clean diet and you're training regularly, that hour of cardio, man, will strip away the body fat. All right. Cool. All right, what else we got? Okay. I'm trying to incorporate a pull-down ab crunch into my ab workouts. I know you've been recommending this exercise in a few of your previous shows. I believe I'm doing the exercise properly. However, for some reason, I really don't feel any burn in my abs after I'm done with it, even after four sets of 15 reps. I just want to put things in perspective. I feel much greater burn after a single set of decline ab crunches. Can you provide me with some direction as to what I can be doing wrong? All right, good question. And I can relate to this one because the pull-down ab crunch is not really an ab isolation exercise. And for those of you watching right now and you're wondering, what the heck is Lee talking about a pull-down ab crunch? I will briefly explain it to the best of my ability right here now. How you would set this up is you would go to a lat pull-down station, face away from the machine, and actually stand up against the machine facing away from it. So the backs of your legs are against the knee pad that you would actually brace your knees under if you were doing a regular lat pull-down. And you would reach behind your head, grab the bar, and crunch down all the way down and, you know, go through a full range of motion. Obviously, you start from the top, crunch all the way down as far as you can, and do your crunches with the resistance of the pull-down bar. Fantastic exercise for the entire core. Now, it's not really an isolation exercise for your abs because you're pulling a lot of muscles in here. I mean, from holding the bar, you're working, you know, everything from your forearms and even, like, the muscles throughout your lats and your chest for stability. Your obliques come into play, you know, your serratus, your whole abs, as well as your hip flexors because your feet are on the floor, and, I mean, that comes into play as well. So it's a lot of muscles coming into play here. And you may not feel it isolate your abs as much because you can't really crunch your abs the same as, say, like you're lying down doing crunches where all you're really doing is cramping your abs with each rep. So even though you're not feeling your abs burning so much, it's still a good overall core exercise. One thing that you can do to feel the exercise more in your abs is to save it for at the end of your ab workout. So, for example, if you find sit-ups work better or crunches, you know, if you feel that, you know, really works your abs where you can feel your abs working, that's what I mean, then do those exercises first and then finish off with the pull-down ab crunches. So you pre-exhaust your abs with the isolation stuff, and then when you do the pull-down ab crunches afterwards, you should be able to feel more of a muscle burn throughout your midsection. But even if you can't feel it working, I wouldn't really worry about it. I mean, make sure that your form is good and everything else, but it's where it's not an isolation exercise per se. You sometimes don't really feel the muscles burning as such. To give you a prime example of this, let's just switch gears for a second and think of your back. If you're doing deadlifts, for example, That's primarily a back exercise, but you may not feel your back burning like you would, for example, if you were doing, I guess, probably like a one-arm dumbbell row or something like that, or maybe a seated cable row, which is probably more of an isolation exercise for the back. Even though, I mean, the deadlift is a killer exercise, and it does work the back and as well as, you know, the hips and the forearms and the traps and all these muscles. You probably won't really feel your back burning the same as you would if you were doing an isolation exercise. But that doesn't mean that doing deadlifts is no good. I mean, they're one of the best exercises you can do. And the pull-down ab crunch kind of fits into this category where you're working a lot of muscle, and it's still a great exercise, but it's not an isolation exercise, so you're really not going to feel the muscles burning as you would if you were doing, again, an isolation movement. So hopefully that makes sense, what I just mentioned. But again, do some isolation exercises at the beginning, and you should be able to pre-exhaust those abs so that you do feel more when you do the pull-down crunch. All right, cool. Some good questions coming through here. All right. Very good. All right. Truden's asking, it says, I'm cutting, and I've always eaten 600 grams of natural homemade unsweetened yogurt before bed. What do you think of this? I can't eat cottage cheese. It makes me sick. All right. I've always eaten 600 grams of natural homemade unsweetened yogurt. How do you make yogurt? I don't know. Homemade yogurt? You have your own cow and make it? I don't know. How do you make yogurt? I've never ever thought of making yogurt. It's always something you just go out and buy. At least that's what I do anyway. Okay, when it comes to your cutting and you're eating the yogurt and that, you're wondering, should you still do it? I guess you're asking me what I think of it, and you're saying that you can't eat cottage cheese. It makes you sick. What I would suggest is in the early phases of a fat loss diet, you can still incorporate some dairy foods, such as the yogurts and whatnot. But if you're really going for extreme fat loss, I would probably cut out some of the dairy. And the reason for it is, even though this is natural and it is no sugar added or whatever, there's still natural sugars in dairy products such as yogurt and whatnot, and it comes from lactose. Lactose is a milk sugar, so it's something that, you know, if you're going to make some cutbacks, then this is probably one area where you could cut back, would be in your dairy products. For me personally, when I'm getting ready for a bodybuilding show, probably 1 or 2 months out from the show, I will cut out dairy products entirely. So no yogurts, cottage cheese, milk, or whatever. Now, again, that's for extreme fat loss. That's not for general fat loss. And what I mean by general fat loss is if you're going out and you're eating McDonald's and fried foods and junk or whatever, I mean, just cutting that out of your diet and doing some more exercise, boom, you're going to lose fat. But if you already have a clean diet, you're already training regularly, you're already doing cardio and all that stuff, I mean, you're already in damn good shape to begin with, but you want to take it to a higher level and get ripped, as in a bodybuilder who's training year-round but then wants to kick it up to the notch to get ready for a show, to get shredded for a show, that's what I consider extreme fat loss. Then things such as dairy products, you probably want to cut out. So instead of eating, you know, your yogurt or whatever, just have a normal meal before bed. For example, you have a high protein, like you have chicken breast and maybe a garden salad or something like that. You know, so again, that's my take on that. In the early phases of a diet, you can still consume dairy and just keep track of your progress. As long as you're still losing body fat, you're still getting leaner and whatnot, then you can keep doing what you're doing. But when your fat loss plateaus and you want to kick it up a notch, then you need to start looking, okay, where can I cut back? And dairy products is one of those things that you can cut back. Okay, so hopefully that answers your question there about the natural homemade unsweetened yogurt. Email me the recipe for that. I'd like to check that out. I don't know how in the world one makes their own yogurt. Anyway, all right, move on. What else we got? I believe it's Kev. Kev251. I'm currently finishing up week 3 of your 12-week program, getting some terrific workouts with this program. Hats off to you for structuring such an organized yet diverse program. Well, thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoy it. I was wondering, what should I do in the event of missing 1 or 2 days worth of workouts during any given week of the program? Should I do my missed days workouts on the next workout day, or should I just go on with the program and perform my regularly planned workout for that next day? You know how it is, personal work life, blah, 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 often gets in the way, and there's times I can't commit to 4 days worth of workouts in a week. Thanks. All right. Good question. Excellent question, actually, because this is something that when I'm doing a workout program, I believe in the 12-week program, the one you're referring to on my website, I actually have it outlined as Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday as the four workout days. But in my reality, in my own workouts, I don't have them scheduled by the days of the week because, just like you mentioned, life gets in the way, and very often, hey, something came up Monday, I can't go to the gym, whatever. So I don't really schedule. I'll just go by the actual workout days. So if you miss a workout, then I would just pick up and do that workout the next time you're at the gym and then just move the entire program ahead by a couple days or whatever. Like it's not a big deal. The main thing is getting all your workouts in. I don't think it matters, like, lining up the days of the week with your workouts. To me, like, instead of having Monday's workout, Tuesday's workout, Wednesday's workout, I just have, like, workout 1, workout 2, workout 3, and regardless of what days of the week they fall on, I really don't care. I just cycle through the whole pattern because, you know, everybody's going to run into some time when they can't make it to the gym, and it's going to throw off your schedule if you're going by the days of the week.